It's Inside Out, the naked truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
Tonight is the 14th episode in At Home at Lupin with the Striders, and I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider. And you remember on that last episode where the villain was about to capture Rochelle, and she was calling, screaming out for help, and we madly ran to her, and the guy with the chainsaw was coming.
And that was the pearls of Rochelle. I mean, the perils of Rochelle.
Wait a minute.
Yes,
tonight we got the
14.
Pearls. We got pearls tonight, don't we?
And we invited, oh my God. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible. And since only your innocence can truly be surprised, please feel free to bring yours with you. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
And tonight's program, as all of our programs, are brought to you by Go Raw, which can be found in Whole Foods. Whole Foods.
We have not been drinking, I must tell you that.
No, but we might start. It might straighten us out. Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, organic section of Costco's, or just go to their website and check out their great products, and they're really healthy and good for you and delicious tasting.
And that website is goraw.com.
And you can call in tonight with your present moment insight or question at 888-627-6008. But if you call in, be prepared for some eager rebuttal.
Oh, my God. And I'm going to repeat that number because he said it rather fast.
Okay.
It's 888-627-6008.
All right. Hurry it up.
It's over.
Oh.
And tonight is a post-Valentine's show because Valentine's Day was on Saturday and today is Tuesday.
Right.
I find it very interesting that Valentine's Day is like that, that we've created this incredibly commercial holiday over loving each other, when that should be something we do every single day of our lives. Love each other.
You think
find ways to appreciate each other, to hear each other, to see each other, to feel, you know, especially the people that you spend a lot of time with, who may not always be appreciated once a year. I mean, that seems rather lame. When there's 365 days to be able to look your partner in the eye and say, this is a good man. I feel grateful.
Even if you're looking at the top of his head as he looks at his computer.
Well, that's true, too, but it doesn't matter.
But it goes in. It goes in.
It does go in.
It's the top chakra. By the way, have you visited your top chakra lately? Well, they've got something special going on Universal Insights and downloading of Universal Perspectives. They've got a perspective coming in from a galaxy that's probably about 18 million light years from ours, but like ours, they're at a similar place of evolution where they love shopping.
Oh, yes. We haven't quite raised our financial wherewithal so that the whole planet can shop. It's only the more industrialized and wealthier countries that do all the shopping. The rest of the people sit in sweat factories to make the items that the wealthier people buy.
Speaking of sweat factories, I was cooking today in the restaurant here at Lupin. And if you come down on Tuesday, Thursday, or Saturday for lunch, I will make you, I promise, the best sandwich I possibly can. And I won't do like I did for our neighbors one day when she ordered a cheeseburger and I gave her the sandwich. But it turns out I forgot the actual meat and the cheese. But
what did you put in it?
Well, there was the tomato and the thing. But she was an astute eater because she looked at it and she remarked, you know, husband, there is no hamburger in this. And then I did it again for my fellow cook, Greg, who reminded me once again, Errol, if you're going to make cheeseburgers, put the cheeseburger in the bun.
After that announcement about his talent, you may not want to come here and share his cooking. Oh, golly.
No,
talk about the negative if you're going to invite people over.
I put the cheese and the burger in the bun at least 80% of the time.
Oh, God, please do not become one of the 20% that eat his cheeseburgers.
Well, sometimes I get it mixed up with peanut butter, so what can I do?
Oh, God. And we're in for a silly ride tonight, everybody.
It is. Speaking of silly... as we mentioned last week, it's a time for us about to become grandparents. And our daughter-in-law, this is the last week of her pregnancy, and she feels so pregnant. What can I tell you? So pregnant.
First thing first, I'm the roundest. They don't ask, but the whole world feel it.
They don't feel it.
And I pee every 10 seconds. I can up and down. I would defy the laws of physics.
Right.
Cup of juice, open beer, make a decaf. Taking prenatal straight, never chase that.
Never.
Put frozen on, wear my nap bag. Acid reflux, you should taste that.
I'm so pregnant. You already know. I'm in the last month. I can't even see my toes. I'm so pregnant. Can't fit any clothes. Don't ask me the name. I don't know.
Don't kick me, I might just go pee-pee. I can't stand no waiting, I just want some sushi.
Better show up on tabs, spend too much money online.
I'm straight up in there so much, ought to give me a job, hit put tab.
Now tell me who that, breathing through that. Put the bag up by the door, I thought you knew that. I be pre-GGO, hold my water, hold.
Did you get my push present, only 2 weeks to go.
I'm so pregnant, got my 10 pillows. I want to sleep, but you say no.
Still swollen, kinkles, can't wait. Got the whole world asking when my due date. Hot mama, hands off, don't touch that. Waddle to it, bet you're wondering if you'll get that back.
I'm so pregnant, no more room to grow. Stretch marks creeping, about to blow, whoa, whoa.
Who that? Free GGO, why'd I do that? Free GGO.
Let go, whoa, whoa.
That was pretty funny. Who recorded that?
It's called Iggy Azalea.
Yeah.
So it's on YouTube, and it's funny to watch. So I recommend to go to YouTube and watch I'm So Pregnant. And if you are, maybe you don't need to be reminded. Let's go. Let's get this newborn out of inside me so it and I can continue.
Well, I'll tell you something. There was something about being past your due date that felt like, I'm never going to have this baby. You know, this is a myth. I'm just really just become a big fat whale. But up until that time, I was very content. I was very content to be pregnant because it was just a delicious experience to realize that you were a container for this new life. And yeah, felt very peaceful. It was a very, very joyful time. I think if I had known how wonderful being pregnant was, I would have had a lot more kids.
And I would have done my best to help her out.
Yes, you would have.
What
I
can
know,
I tell you?
You're a good man, Errol Strider.
People ask Rochelle when she was pregnant, has the baby dropped? And she says, you know, I'm 4'11". Where's it going to drop?
Exactly. There was no, when it dropped, it came out.
That's it. There was no between, no purgatory for the baby. Just you're in and then you're out. Although we did have to go in after love with some clippers.
Not clippers.
What would they call them?
They were not clippers.
They were tweezers.
No.
Tweezers.
They were, don't say any of those things. They sound absolutely horrible.
No, it was.
They weren't tweezers. Oh, great. Now I can't remember at all.
Forceps.
Forceps. Thank you so
forceps.
Much.
Forceps. Yeah. Fortunately, we had a pair of forceps in the garden, and they were handy.
Did not. Please, people, do not take anything he says tonight seriously.
We used the forceps to help our cow when she gave birth to a kitten. Very unique cow. I'm sorry. I'm just.
Harold, you are just strange to me tonight.
I have to share something here. Because sometimes the things you said just come back to bite you. So if you'll bear with me here, I'm going to share the blog that I wrote just recently. And it's called The Jokes on Fear. And it goes like this. Fear makes life things much more serious than they actually are. Think about all the fears that drive so much human behavior. Anytime there's anger, guilt, paranoia, denial, self-sabotage, even cynicism. It's just fear pointing to the potential for pain and loss in a way that practically shuts off the laugh-at-yourself mechanism. Trust me on this. Laughter is so happy and delighted when it gets to come out. So when the old meanie feared dumb comes along and shouts at you with all the horrible things that could happen if you don't chase them off with fear itself in its numerous disguises, hostility, recrimination, grievances, unforgiveness, blame, shame, guilt, etc., things get way more serious than needed. And by the way, that's how far fear will go to keep itself employed. Now, don't get me wrong, the adrenaline kick in the butt stimulus in the face of present danger, like if you're about to get eaten or blown up or balled out, is vital to our survival. But it is only supposed to last long enough to either get your ass down the road or go pounce on your adversary. It's not supposed to be chronic, like worrying or complaining or endless justifications of your existence. So it's helpful to catch yourself as you go down the all-too-familiar paths to fear and stop and repent, which, of course, means turn around and open yourself up to the antidote to fear, love, and allow it to take you over and to direct your ways. You'll be surprised how funny the source of your fears become. You may even find yourself telling jokes like, I was so scared that... Now here's where you get to fill in the punchline. Here's where you get to call in. I was so scared that, and in my case yesterday, I was so scared that I actually went into a loud argument with someone that I had no chance of achieving anything other than to practice talking loudly. Anyway, so as Yeshua ben Joseph said, fear not. So you want to laugh more? Then learn to see those fears for what most of them are, a joke. Think on it.
That was fun.
I share this because yesterday, and I saw where my fear jumps up. Uh-oh. You know what we're going to do now, don't you? Yeah, we're going to get naked. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, shoot. Well... I was in the office, see, and I was trying to be efficient and effective and hardworking, and then there was this encounter with this other person in the office, and she told me I was lazy and essentially dumb and stupid, and I went into massive, I'm not that way. and she said, I said, don't blame me. She says, I am going to blame you. And of course, the guilt, and I'm taking it off now, the guilt just totally took me over. Oh, and I couldn't control myself, and I was humbled once again because I realized that I needed to perpetuate an image of myself as someone who is not guilty, not lazy, and not to blame.
Oh, God, you're so beautiful when you're naked. That's a great little thing you got there. The time on our show when we take our illusions and get them off and just appear truly naked. You know, I always think it's funny. You know, I see so many people here. We're living in a clothing optional environment, so there's a lot of naked people walking around. They're naked, but they're not naked.
What does that mean?
Well, they have their clothes off, but they also have there's a wall.
Oh, yes.
You know, so yes. It's like the wall, the invisible wall, protects them in their nudity. But it's a lot of people, and not everybody, but a lot of people. And I can understand that because we have a very sex image about nudity. Nudity and sexuality go together in our culture. Not so much in Europe. In Europe, people are much more comfortable with their bodies. I mean, when I was there, maybe they become more Americanized, which is kind of scary.
That was shortly after the war.
No, it wasn't. Which war? There's a war everywhere.
It's the war always something.
There's a war everywhere. But when I went to Europe, the first time I was 18 years old or 19 or 20, I can't remember anymore. But I just remember seeing, you know, women with bare backs and lying on beaches in Nice. And I felt all the time that they were very comfortable with their bodies. And they were not just all looking like bathing suit models or swimsuit models, but they were women, you know, older women with all sorts of bodies. And I've always was very attracted to that kind of freedom and working on it, of course, in my own way.
Well, that seems to be what we've undertaken in this lifetime, is to break through into greater awareness. And some people say, well, why would you go through that? It's a lot to give up. But the value of greater awareness is you have many more choices, many more places in the universe in which you get to play and solve problems. Some days I think that's basically all that I do. We have some problem solving and then we rest and eat.
You know, I'm so aware that as problem solvers, human beings as problem solvers, is what makes that's how we evolve. We're constantly solving problems. And I don't even want to talk about them as problems, but we come up against a wall, let's say. We're walking down a path, and you can't get over a piece of water. It's too rushing, it's too thing. And you build a bridge so that you can cross it the next time you come by. And that bridge is there for many, many, many centuries for people to cross over this rushing water. And it's constantly like that. We're constantly building bridges from one impassable place to another impassable place so that it becomes passable. I like that. Impassable,
like that?
Rather than impossible.
I like it too.
It's impassable.
It is impassable.
I wrote something the other day that I wanted to share because sometimes I write things that I really fall in love with, and I don't know why I did, but it was my kind of thing. I have heard a higher voice, a voice within me from the time I was 11. And so it happened around 11. I can't remember a single detail or a context or a date, but I became consciously aware of the moreness. I called it God, for I had no other container for it, and I wanted to contain the infinite, the mystery, the allness, love, with capital letters. But that was part of my cuteness. That I will admit to. Imagine trying to corral the infinite. Now I want to step out of the skin that keeps all the gooiness in place and melt into the crevices of my own consciousness. I want to expand beyond definition, leaving my attachment to the atomic glue that creates matter, and vibrate, resonate to that which cannot be probed. Each particle of the infinite is infinite, nothing less, for less is always finite. What's happening? Who's talking?
Well, this is what's happening. We're going to play this song by Alicia Keys, because I think it fits right in, because it's called We Are Here.
Incense. We gon' pray for the innocent, 'cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Save the nation. We're no support for education, 'cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. Not what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls are brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we
was moving. That was, that touched me.
We are here.
Yeah.
Alicia Keys.
Yeah. I keep becoming aware that I occupy this small little space and time, and all those millions and millions of other people, billions of other people occupying their small space and time. And we're all like these dots in a pointillistic painting, you know, that make up a whole. And the realization that each one of us is this dot. And if you move it even a little bit, it changes the whole picture. you pull out one, put in another one, and it's a changing picture, but nevertheless, it's a complete picture because we're all in it. And this picture changes over eons. It changes, you know, slightly. The hues change, maybe the sculpture of it changes, but the dots, each dot is forever there, so that the picture gets bigger and bigger, even though we're no longer part of the picture. Our place in the picture is forever. And I don't know why that sounded interesting to me, but it did the other night when I was thinking about it, that it was a very, the sense of myself as this tiny little dot in this picture that adds to the whole. That's all there is to it. It just adds to the whole.
I have this poem that I'd like to share. It kind of follows. It's called Questions and People. There are questions and people wandering inside of me, circling round each other, not understanding what the other is doing. Commingled, the abstract and the living, symbiotes like ships and barnacles, bracelets and wrists. The people leave aromas and impressions like an unfinished patchwork quilt. And the questions are like puppies inside a smooth container, jumping, slipping, and falling in attempts to find a foothold to resolution. Somehow I feel these persons and inquiries are related, expressing parts of me that have not congealed. The questions begin me, so we will begin there, but we will then go on to the living, for in this strange concoction of will, identity, taste, feelings, and mind of the other, my questions might perhaps just find their comfort, or at least a glimpse of the ultimate denominator that must lie within us all, in wait, past barriers of differences, surging upward like a buried geyser, my true and flowing self, no longer with questions or separate from the other persons, but identified at the core, inextricably connected to the source.
Hmm.
Well, what do you have to say about that?
Well, it felt like an inquiry of the universe.
Well, that is a lot of what drives me and us. And I think as an artist, in a way, you enter the question in every artistic creation, at least I do, because it's like you pose a problem with the materials, with whatever the impulse is within you, and then you set about trying to solve it in the most vivid, interesting, if not beautiful way that you can.
According to your talent.
And taste.
Right, and I think that's a big thing. I mean, the artist is like, you know, there's so many different forms of art, but like you said, the artist drops into this place, you know, to looking at something and bringing it into another form, giving it another form, because it already has a form of some kind that you're working with. And
it doesn't matter. You'll talk about it now. It'll be the now, because tonight's show is dedicated to the now.
Well, there was a book of a photographer. I can't remember her name, but she took pictures in Massachusetts, off Massachusetts, Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket. And her pictures, like she would see a knot in a piece of wood and she'd take a picture of it, and it wasn't a knot in a piece of wood anymore. The knot was the world unto itself. And it was magnificent. And she would see the place where a right angle was made. And at that point, at that juncture, she would photograph it. And she was amazing. And I wish I could remember her name. I wish I could find out her name.
If you know her name, the photographer who took pictures of Martha Vineyards, let us know. We are Inside Out. This is The Naked Truth. We are doing our best to probe into it. And grateful once again for our sponsor, Go Raw. And tonight is also sponsored by another sponsor, which is new and improved this moment. Yes, friends, if you tired of the same old moments, if one moment starts to look just like the last one, if you've had the same dilapidated thoughts every day, they just feel tired, worn down, boring. If your life is practically a cliche and you find that you can practically finish every sentence you start, then try new and improved this moment. And it's like no moment you've ever had before. So all that is required is your presence. So come on in, join us in this moment so we can probe together what is underneath all the illusions and delusions of life.
That was interesting. I was reminded so much of last week. For some strange reason, I had great difficulty falling asleep one night. And it's that kind of sleep, you know, where you can't fall asleep, so you start doing these relaxation exercises, you know, relax your toes, relax your ankles, your shins, you know, all this whole thing. And then before you get to your head, you're looking at the clock and going, well, if I fall asleep now, I'll have 5 hours sleep. And then before you know it, you're going, if I fall asleep now, I'll have an hour's sleep. And that's what I did. I had an hour's sleep. But the next day was so amazing. I was so present. It was the most present I have been in a long time. Every second. I mean, it was just, it was, because I'm present a lot in the course of a day. But there was, every moment I was filled with me being there, aware, with that 1 hour sleep. And it seems to have created an exponential awareness of nowness as a result of it. Even today, I felt like I'm more present to the moment that I'm in, the people that I'm with. So I don't know, like there's drugs and then there's not sleeping. To get you really present.
or the creative moment.
That is the, it became a creative moment. It really did.
This
became
is
a creative moment.
This is a poem I wrote called The Creator. I jumped aside a moment today and found, to my surprise, a glittering gem on the sidewalk, an unobserved creature trembling with brilliance and unquenchable insights. I jumped outside time today and felt a vagabond image hovering in the air, waiting to be realized. I stood apart from space today, peering inside to the undercurrent of unrecognized conclusions, possible actuals that exist between the unseen and the underside of what is. I backed away from the traffic today of the sequence of events, connecting one expectation to another, and discovered a kernel embryo slinking in a crevice, dying for attention. So I pulled it out with my mind, noticed it, and gave it life. If I hadn't stepped aside today, little gems would go unnoticed, inventions unrealized, and poems never written. Thank you.
It made me think of this book that I'm reading right now called Boston Translation by Eva Hoffman. It's an autobiography, and she's an artist, even if she produced no art, because every moment is like that in her life. It's like this book is filled with those moments of pulling it out with her mind and giving it expression, and it's very inspiring. Reading her autobiography is getting me inspired to write again because the awareness that
what
Errol is walking around, because there's something knocking, there's something making noise, and he's pulling things away as I'm talking.
Wait, I think I hear it. It's my soul knocking on my consciousness. Just a minute.
It was an interruption.
No. It's because it needed to interrupt me, because it had something important to say. And just a minute. Oh, yes, Errol Strider. We are trying to reach you with a very important message. Really? What is that? Yes, it's not all cracked up to be what it represents itself to be. Well, what's that? We're talking about the finite universe. Well, but you gave me these five senses. I mean, aren't I supposed to kind of like get off on it? The five senses were just given to you to give you a taste of the possibility of infinite ways of interacting with an ever-wise variable universe. Ever-wise, I never heard that. Yes, it's how we describe that which cannot be comprehended by the human mind, the ever-wise. Is that something I can achieve for myself? Yes, my darling boy, you can achieve it. Just continue to pay attention and listen to your wife. Oh, okay. So there, Rochelle, what do you have to tell me? Because you told me I need to listen.
I don't know, because you interrupted, and my brain is too old to go back in time and pick up something that had been dropped.
Sorry, I feel so bad.
Sometimes you're like a little kid. No, you are a little kid. What am I saying? You are a little kid. You're like a little kid.
Oh.
You got an idea. You want to express it.
Oh, well.
Right then and there.
But that's okay. We're getting naked again.
That's okay.
Uh-oh. What about you? Have you been naked this week?
Yep.
Can you think of a moment where you were kind of disrobed from your image?
I think that's what I'm doing at this point in my life. You know, that there's something, if anyone's listening who's growing older, which means you're still alive, and obviously, if you're listening, you're still alive, you're aware that in order to grow in with dignity, to grow with grace, to grow with joy, you have to be willing to let go of yesterday and really be in the moment that we're in. And so I'm facing that more and more every day. I look at myself, and there really is an older woman looking back at me. And I look at pictures that were taken 20, 30 years ago, and there's this young woman, and I recognize her. I mean, I feel like she's inside me. She's still there, but she's not on the surface of me anymore. And the surface of me is an older woman. And I'm making peace with this image of this older woman. I'm making peace with it in a really gentle, loving way. She just walked into my life, and all I want to do is hug her and be in her soft embrace, because she's so soft. Physically soft. So yes, I am definitely working at letting go of these images that I had from the past, and realizing, even as I make peace with the image of the present, it's still an image. And then I'm more than that image. I'm definitely more.
Well, one thing about growing old is it definitely, in some ways, makes you more aware of your body, especially parts that need attending or perhaps aren't working.
When I had my colonoscopy, I had a question on my mind. Do we all look the same when the doctor sees us from behind? Then I had the answer. I felt like such a fool, 'cause the doctor smiled and said to me, "Your colon's really cool. My colon's really cool." What a nice surprise. He sees a lot of colons, but my colon took the prize. Then he added something that was even more divine. We found a polyp hiding Peter, but we caught it just in time. He found a polyp hiding. Don't mean to sound so crass, but the polyp was discovered by a camera of my mother, and my father spoke to me that very day. They said, "My son, it seems you've won the polyp prize. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Now the camera that they used is not like the ones on movie lots. It's a camera that is tiny, and it takes interior shots. It's a camera that is groovy. It can twist and turn and bend to film your colon story and ensure a happy end. So, listen to me closely, for this is not a lie. Colon cancer can be beaten if you are not camera shy. Call your doctor swiftly, no ifs or ands or buts. Schedule your colonoscopy, I know you've got the guts. My colon's really cool, and what a nice surprise. My doctor sees a lot of colons, but mine took the prize. Mine took the prize, my friends. Mine took the prize. My colon's really groovy, so my colon took first prize."
Oh, that is so funny. Who wrote that, and what is it called?
The Colonoscopy Song by Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Peter Yarrow.
Is that funny?
Colonoscopy, that's what it's called?
Colonoscopy Song. Well, you
don't I want to talk about colonoscopy?
No, never mind. No.
I mean, even wanted to give me another one, and I kind of like fell off the examining table. Hi. It's not the colonoscopy that is a problem. The colonoscopy is really, you know, it's nothing big deal at all. It's what you have to do to get ready for a colonoscopy that's really disgusting. You have to drink some horrible kind of stuff that makes you want to go to the bathroom
I'm sorry. We're sorry.
You're totally cleaned out.
I'm apologizing.
Now, that part he didn't sing about.
It is so gross.
It's not gross. It's just part of who you are.
That's true.
It's the stuff that has to come out of you.
It
comes out of you all the time.
You know, the body, I was thinking the other day, it's so unbelievably complex, and there's so much going on. And speaking of the now, I mean, right now there's like trillions of interactions just in our own bodies,
yes.
Let alone
yes.
the rest of the universe.
I was thinking about that the other day, too. I was thinking how all these things inside of me work together. They cooperate really well most of the time, and every now and then something gets in the way, and then you feel it. You know, you get a pain here or something, and it's saying to you is that all the parts are not cooperating, that somebody's jamming up the works, you know, and you got to really pay attention to the being or the thing that's jamming up the works, because once that thing is eradicated by, you know, whatever method you use to eradicate it, and then everybody cooperates again, your body is doing fine.
Well, that's the key, it seems like. It reminds me of a book I read many years ago called No Contest. And basically, it was a very comprehensive argument against the position that competition is necessary, inevitable, and good for you. And this author, I forgot his name, it's called No Contest. And basically, he extols the virtues, but in a very pragmatic way through science and history and in ways that can be measured. that cooperation really is a better way to go. And so it behooves us to become a more cooperative society.
But it's interesting because in sports, team competition requires each team to be very cooperative in order to best the other team. But within the teams, there's this tremendous sense of cooperation, everyone playing their part and doing whatever it takes in order to best. So,
especially in bowling.
So team competition, in a way, is a little bit more closer to cooperation than single competition, where you're just, you know, trying to best another person. Not that one is better or worse than the other, but team competition has that element of cooperation in it.
Well, I've read that we are essentially semi-civilized, and I think you can see that from a society that was just constantly warring to a society that's mixing warring with competition, kind of halfway there toward letting go of the warring part.
There's so much war going on on our planet right now. You know, there's so many pockets of people trying to annihilate each other simply for some excuse or other. And that semi-civilized definition seems like it doesn't apply in certain places. It seems like behind semi-civilized to barbaric and reptilian, and it still reminds me of just how immature we really are as a species, that we still seem to think the only way to get our way is to eliminate some other person's way.
Well, that's what I noticed in that little altercation I had yesterday. It's a variation on the same thing. Essentially, I went to war.
Right.
Except it was a war not of weapons. It was verbal weapons and emotional weapons. And I remember there was a certain point in the conversation where I was being heatedly attacked, essentially, and I made the mistake of thinking, oh, I'm going to be more intense and louder. I remember making that decision and regretting it immediately as the loud, because I knew I was not going to win this contest. That there was not that way. And I was happy to report that the person with whom I engaged said something like, we lopped each other's heads off today, Errol and I. And I was glad to see that she was right, although I was concerned about where my head was.
Once it got lopped off?
Right.
You know, the truth is, once it got lopped off, you really don't care anymore.
It's true. It's true. By the way, speaking of piece of music, there is a...
I didn't speak about a piece of music.
Oh, well, there's a
piece of... If I were speaking about a piece of music, this is what he'd say.
That's right. There's a piece of music that's hardly known. At least I've certainly never met anyone who knew it. I don't even think the composer heard of it. Anyway, it was called The Execution of Stefan Razin, I believe. It was by Shostakovich. And it is... If you want intense, if you want to go on a musical ride that's intense, I recommend it. But in the meantime, I think relevant to our conversation, I'd like to take you on this little, it's really kind of a mandala kind of musical.
I actually heard The Great Mandala one day when I walked up into Albert Grossman's office. I thought it was the most powerful anti-war, anti-injustice song ever written, and made rebels of us all. I still tell Peter that that's the best song he ever wrote. And he reached deep, and he came up with it.
So I told him that he'd better shut his mouth and do his job like a man. And he answered, "Listen, Father, I will never kill another. He thinks he's better than his brother that died. What the hell does he think he's doing to
his father who brought him upright. Take your place on the great mandala as it moves through your brief moment of time. Win or lose now, you must choose now. And if you lose, you're only losing your life. Tell the jailer not to bother with his meal of bread and water today. He is fasting till the killing's over. He's a martyr.
He's a martyr.
He thinks he's a prophet.
He's a prophet.
But he's a coward.
He's a coward.
He's just playing the game.
He's just playing the game. He can do it.
He can change it.
It's been going on for 10,000 years.
Take your place on the great mandala. As it moves through your brief moment of time. Win or lose,
win or lose now.
You must choose now.
Must choose. Now.
And if you lose, you're only losing your life.
Tell the people they are safe now. Hunger stopped him. He lies still in his cell. Death has gagged his accusations. We are free now.
We can kill now. We can aim now.
Now we can end the world. We're not guilty. He was crazy. And it's been going. You're only losing your life.
You're only losing.
And if you lose, you're only losing your life.
And if you lose, you're only wasting your life.
I don't know. There was like a lot in it that I was baffled by. Maybe my mind is not as alert.
It's called the baffling song.
No, it isn't. Like your place on the grave. Who sang this song? Who's this? Who wrote it?
It's written by, actually, Paul, we played Peter Yarrow before, and he wrote that, and he sang it with Richie Havens.
Really?
Yeah.
Peter Yarrow wrote that?
Yeah. And Richie Havens sang it.
Richie Havens.
And I think it's right to the point. We must choose now. I think that's clear always. And I think that's what the now brings us to. We talked earlier about coming into the now here on Inside Out, The Naked Truth. And the curious thing is that the now always asks for a decision, which is kind of an irony. I'm deciding. Well, where's the now in all of that? The now is kind of like the bedrock, the foundation of that holds existence in place and allows this thing of movement through time, like music, like we've been listening to. I mean, it's this strange thing.
I don't think I understand what you mean when you said the now is always asking you to make decisions.
Well, in the sense that it's decisions, decisions, and decisions that we keep, that keeps moving us in our journey. And
but in a sense, I think that the only time you really have to make a decision is when you leave the now, as if you can, but you can't really leave the now.
I think there are creative decisions that you haven't left the now, and you're making a decision to go this way or that. I don't think necessarily it's about leaving the now. I think there's all kinds of just ways of being part of the now.
Well, to me, when we speak about being part of the now, I don't think of it in terms of time. I think of it constantly in terms of engagement. And I'm fully engaged with something. And when I'm fully engaged with something, I don't really have to sit there and make a decision as much as I can see. I can see where to go. It's like in the now, when I'm present to this moment, when I'm present to this place, when I'm present to this person, I'm also receiving so much information that leads me to the next moment that it's not, I think it's almost takes me beyond that decision-making place. It takes me to the place that, and I, the decision that I have to make all the time is to get back to the place where I don't have to make a decision.
Well, there you have it. There you have a paradox, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because that I'm so aware that when I'm present, you fill me with all your needs. And if I'm able, I can supply them.
And, of course, it will vary upon whether you're high-maintenance or low-maintenance person.
Well, let's not get into that because then we have to play that naked song all over again.
Ooh, don't want to go there. Where we do want to go is to be with you, to remind you that you're here with us. And it's California, Lupin Lodge, Los Gatos. We are
Rochelle Strider.
And Errol Strider. And we're broadcasting this program called Inside Out, The Naked Truth.
And remember,
Wait, we're not there yet.
No, well, the way you started talking, it sounded like we were finished.
Well, no, don't you have some little additional thing? I can feel it just bubbling in your mind, some little, something you, when your granddaughter first says, why?
Oh, I was thinking about that why, all those whys that every philosopher asks why. All the time. That's what makes a philosopher a philosopher.
Well, that's a great way to end our show because, in fact, we do have to end. And we love being with you, and we'll be back again next Tuesday night.
So remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. Good night.
Good night.